You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up, stay tuned for Sojourner Truth Radio.
Oh, Lordy me, yes, it's so Lordy mine. Who's gonna be your man?
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society concert season. On Friday, November 22nd, the Honey Whiskey Trio returns to the PFS stage. Prior to the concert, the Honeys will conduct a vocal workshop. Attendees will learn shape note singing, body percussion, and shout songs. The workshop will be held from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m., followed by the concert starting at 7:30, doors at 7. The concert and workshop will be held at Reedwood French Church at 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we return to our in-depth coverage of the ongoing crisis in Haiti. An official report issued last week implicated Haiti's U.S.-backed President Jovenel Moïse as participating in the disappearance of billions of Petrocaribe money from Venezuela meant for use for the Haitian people. Since he became president, resulting from questionable elections reported to be fraudulent, the Movement for Democracy in Haiti has been pressing in massive nationwide protests for Jovenel Moïse to step down. The Haitian government responded to the protests by encouraging or downright supporting massacres targeting grassroots leaders and communities that initiated protests and who historically have been a stronghold of resistance. These include the massacres we have reported on Sojourner Truth in the community of La Saline. In a five-week period, I made two trips as part of emergency delegations to Haiti to get testimonies from communities under attack, as well as to send a message to the Haitian government that we intend to get the truth out as widely as we can about what was going on. While in Haiti, I did an in-depth interview with Pasha Vorbe, a member of the Executive Council of FANMI Lavalas, the political organization headed by former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide and supported by the vast majority of impoverished in Haiti. Today, we bring you that conversation. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. And now I bring you a conversation, an in-depth interview that I did while on the ground recently in Haiti with Pasha Vorbe, a member of the Executive Council of FANMI Lavalas, the political organization headed by former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide and supported by the vast majority of the impoverished in Haiti. It is live radio. We do have some background noise, but it was an absolutely riveting conversation with Pasha, so stay tuned. Pasha, welcome.
Margaret, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you and spend a few moments together so we can talk about different subjects.
That's right. And okay to call you Pasha?
Definitely. That's the only name everybody knows. You know, only my mom and probably my wife remember the name Joel, but everybody calls me Pasha.
Okay. And tell us your official position.
I'm actually a member of the executive committee of the organization, the political organization, FANMI Lavalas, and I'm also a member of the administrative council of UNIFA.
All right. So, Pasha, I am in Haiti yet again.
as part of a delegation with Congresswoman Maxine Waters, the actor and activist, humanitarian, Mr. Danny Glover, Brian Concanon, a lawyer who has worked on issues related to Haiti for quite some time, as well as Walter Riley, who is with the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, now, and Pierre Lavoisier of Haiti Action. They've all left already on the way back to the United States. We had a very interesting day yesterday, which we'll talk about. But Pasha, just knowing a little bit about who you are and also realizing the way Haiti, unfortunately, has been organized, I have the feeling that given the sector of the population, the Haitian population that you are from, you really don't have to be doing this work with the grassroots people. You did not have to throw your lot in and spend as much of your time and energy as you do working on behalf of not only the entire country of Haiti, but given the percentage of Haitians who are impoverished, of impoverished people, you could be living your life in another way. Why is that?
Margaret, it's all about people's relationship and also education. The way my family has been brought up is that we have no differences. The apartheid doesn't exist amongst us Asian. We are all one nation and one people. In order for that to be true and for it to happen, we need to bring them up to our level so we can be all enjoying at the same level. So it would have been out of my education if I was looking the opposite way and not looking at that reality that we are living in Haiti today. The reality of Haiti today is that more than 90 or to 95% of the population is poor and has been poor for so many years. And there are reasons behind it, but there are also solutions behind it.
That's true, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but are you saying that within your family unit, you were raised and brought up with this ethic, that even though you may have more than most of people who live in Haiti, that you have to be concerned with the majority of Haitians?
Not only you have to be concerned, but if you are, consider yourself as a Haitian, you have to give back to your country. What makes your country is the people of your country that makes your country.
But there's so many, and let's say people in the 1% in Haiti who don't give back and indeed take so much from Haiti.
And that's the reason the situation is what it is today. And until we reach the point where we all understand that we need to look forward and start thinking for the majority of the people, because the world has been developed and we don't need to invent anything. We just need to be in good faith and accept to follow the rules that helps a country step up from its knees to be able to walk by itself and be independent. Haiti is the first black republic independent of the world. Haiti gave independence to black people all over the world. But do us Asian understand what it means? Do us Asian understand how beautiful it is that we have been the first black republic independent of the world? No. So until we do and we care for each other and we want what's best for each other, because if I want my sons to go to a certain school, I have to want the same thing for the majority of the people. So why can't we build schools that are in a system that is without exclusion? And we have to unfortunately repeat what President Aristide has been saying for years, and it's still valuable as of today. There's only one solution, is include everybody and start thinking for everybody and start wanting for everybody to be, because we would have been a much richer country, because you have visited many islands and you see that they have found their way to development, but everybody's living equally in those places. They have the same school, we share the same hospitals, and in the hospital bed, there's no exclusion. In the operating room, you cannot exclude someone. The doctor will give me the same treatment as he will give one of my brothers. Why is it that when we get out of that operating room, we cannot get along or we cannot have feelings for each other? So for me, it's part of my education, and it's part of seeing also what's going on in other countries, saying that if I consider myself as a Haitian, I want the same for my country. So okay. I will always be at the side of the majority until they get out of that misery, that poverty, which is increasing as the year passes by, instead of the other way around.
So at what point then in your education, in your life path, did you become involved with La Velocidad? For our people watching this show, or for our listeners who may not know what La Velocidad is, La Velocidad, the party headed by Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who was also the first democratically elected president of Haiti. And La Velocidad is also a movement. Someone told me that it means flash flood. Is that right? Did
yes.
they get that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and when I see supporters of La Velocidad on the street in the numbers that they are, you can understand the reason for that particular name. But at what point did you decide to not only become involved with La Velocidad, but you have great responsibility as a member of the executive committee, or executive, yes, the executive committee of La Velocidad?
Yeah. It's like I told you, your roots are from your parents. Mm-hmm. And my roots, my parents, my father's uncle was exiled. His uncle was also executed. Another one was executed by the Duvalier regime at the time. So they have always fought for this majority, and always been in the camp of that majority that was suffering and that was poor. 1987. One of them participated in giving Haiti a new constitution. He passed away, unfortunately, now he's old. He died being old. And my father, my uncles, all of them, practically, they showed us the path to lead us. We used to play soccer. We used to have big fanatics with Violette and Racine, which are two soccer clubs in Haiti. So we used to be part of everything, every movement that was going on with the population. So where the majority of the bourgeoisie, that we would call them, didn't go, unfortunately, at that time. So being raised like that in 1986, I was able to witness the departure of Duvalier and see the joy that happened in the streets, and see the hope also that the majority of the population had at that time. Mm-hmm. In 1990, it was the first time I was able to vote, so I was able to give my vote to President Aristide at the time and witness from there on everything that happened. I wasn't involved in Famille La Velocidad at the time, but I was close enough to want to participate next to them at this time. We had the different coup d'etats that you know of. And then my uncle, Franz Gabriel, he was very close also to President Aristide. He was his pilot also at one point, his helicopter pilot. And Franz, he's also my godfather. So we were very close, we are still very close. And at the time, I started getting involved a little bit more. In 2002, unfortunately, I got shot in the neck, and this is how I became quadriplegic. I came back in Haiti at the end of 2003. because I set the celebration 200 years. I wanted to be in Haiti. I had to be in Haiti. When I got there, the situation...
So did you just... So after the really terrific, horrible thing that happened where you got shot, were you out of the country then after that for treatment, etc., and
for
then
returned
yes. in 2003?
Yes, okay. I had to be evacuated because unfortunately my case was not able to be treated in Haiti. So I was evacuated in Miami, Florida, mm-hmm. where I had to spend practically a year over there to get as much rehabilitation as possible. And I came, like I told you, before the celebration of 200 years of independence of Haiti.
Which would have been 2004. You wanted to be here for that.
Exactly. And I was there. I had a chance to sit down with President Aristide at the time to talk a little bit about the situation in the country mm-hmm. and what was happening. Even though I had a young age still at the time, but we spoke about it because I witnessed the two coup d'etat, the coup attempts also before 2004. I was there, witnessed all of that.
Well, let me just say this, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with it. And again, this is Margaret Prescott on the ground in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And my guest is a man popularly known throughout Haiti as Pasha. He is a member of the executive committee of Famille Lavalas, the party that is headed by Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And he's also on the administrative council of the University of the Aristide Foundation. And we just paused to reintroduce our guest, but also to say, Pasha, for those who may not know that background, that 6 months after President Aristide was first elected, there was a U.S.-backed coup against him. And, of course, the people fought for his return. And yet again, another coup in 2004.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but before the 2004 coup, there were two coup attempts.
Two coup attempts.
Yeah, two major coup attempts with thugs coming all over saying that they are going to attack. They did attack the National Palace at one time. And fortunately, President Aristide was not at the palace at that time. So he had also almost, I don't know, got killed or shot at that time during those coup attempts also. Everybody pretended it was a hoax, it wasn't true, it was something he built up until those people behind it came up and said, yes, we did. We came in the palace at that time and we did try. It was in July and December. I'm not sure of the dates, but we can find that out okay. to give you the yeah. specific dates. From there on, from my conversation with President Aristide in 2004, unfortunately, February 29th came and we saw the Americans again kidnapped President Aristide at the time. And I had the chance to witness it also because my godfather, who was next to President Aristide and flew with him in that same plane, that same night, the only person he thought of calling was me. So it was probably 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning when I received the call, and he told me that we were surrounded by international personnel, and we have no choice but to follow them at one point. So it was at that point that I witnessed it over the phone live. But like you see today, the resolution of the Haitian people, they continue to fight after fighting a second time to make sure that President Aristide returns home safely and continues participating and leading the way, because I think he has a real vision for that majority of people that we are talking about. You had a chance to witness that yesterday.
Absolutely. And I mean, what a moment that you witness over the phone. For those of us in the United States, of course, the reports we were getting was that President Aristide resigned. You know, there's nothing, you know, and we know that that certainly is not the case. But what did happen in the lead up to the anniversary of the 200 years for the Haitian Revolution, constantly across the U.S. mainstream media, you saw a vilification of President Aristide. The words that were used, dictator, and I mean every negative image, a strongman that you could think of, and freedom fighters were, you know, attempting to do what they can to bring them up. I mean, this is the kind of lies, really, that were being fed not only in the United States but also internationally, and that was kind of softening people up for then that fateful night that you were part of because of getting that phone call. Were you all aware here of what was going on and the build-up and the verification in the media of the president?
We witnessed it, and not only we had the chance to witness it, but we had the chance now to talk to people that regret enormously of having participated in that scam. They were explaining how sometimes at the radio, they were pretending to be on the streets, but in fact they were at the radio studio with casseroles and stuff, making noise, pretending that there was something major happening. So
we have never heard this.
Yes. And it's to explain to you how deep that thing was taught. But it's also the reality of the power of money. And the reason that they want to keep this majority in poverty, because you can easily buy them out when necessary. The amount of money that they request to follow something or do something, even though they don't think it's right, is very little. So this is what the power of money was able to do, and this is the reason they don't want even middle class to emerge in Haiti. Because if you stay long enough in Haiti, you will realize that there is no middle class practically.
Yeah, and a lot of people indeed ask the question, and I remember Randall Robinson talking about that, of people saying, why Haiti? Because Randall Robinson, of course, when President Aristide was in exile for the first coup, then he was with TransAfrica, was part of the people protesting, etc., demanding that to the Clinton administration that the president be returned. But still today, I do a lot of coverage on Haiti on my show. And people say, but why the focus on Haiti? Or why does the United States take such an interest, not only the United States, but with their friends in France and Canada, in keeping Haiti down and keeping Haiti impoverished? Like, what is the reason for that? Do you have any, can you speculate on any of that?
No, we all know the reason. Haiti was the first black republic independent in the world.
And be punished ever since?
Definitely. You have to be on your knees and say sorry. And President Aristide was evicted from power because he had the courage to say that France needed to reimburse the debt of the independence. You imagine a country that fought for its independence, and then years after you say you have to pay a debt of independence. We continued paying that debt until 1947, probably.
Yeah, after World War II.
You were still paying that debt. So the fact that President Aristide said this was unacceptable, you have to reimburse to Haiti this money because we fought for our independence. And you would think that the U.S., France, and Canada, that are leaders and the equality of humanity today, even though we know racism still exists in all those countries, but still there's a fight trying to win over this situation, you would think that they would say, you know what, Haiti is the first black republic, let's get her out of this misery and the situation, because 12 million people, a small country of 27,000 square kilometers. It's something major. Build one hospital in every department. Build maybe one school in every city or a little bit more. How much do you think it would cost?
We're going to take a short station break, and when we return, we'll continue my conversation with Pasha Ovorbe. I did that interview when I was recently on the ground in Haiti. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from The Hot Sardines, bringing their jazz to the Newmark Theater on Sunday, November 24th. Tickets available at Portland5.com.
Back to Sojourner Truth. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. Our handle on Instagram and Twitter at So True Radio. And we're also on SoundCloud worldwide. Again, just look for Margaret Prescott with Sojourner Truth. And today we'd like to give a shout out to all of our SoundCloud listeners in New Orleans, Louisiana. And internationally, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the island nation of Haiti, the world's first Black Republic. And now we continue my in-depth conversation with Pasha Ovorbe. He is a member of the Executive Council of Famille Lavalas, the political organization headed by former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide and supported by the vast majority of the impoverished in Haiti.
The other story that I'm learning a bit more about is that there is great natural wealth in Haiti, and even the under the ground. And even where some of the most impoverished places in the Americas are located in Haiti, places like Cité Soleil, places like La Saline, it's one of the, somebody said, notice it's one of the few places in the world where you have coastline property that is impoverished, that isn't just where the homes, like that whole swath of land. And sometimes one has to wonder what those two realities, the wealth under the ground, I mean the first Black Republic, but also the wealth under the ground and the land that may be coveted by some, have to do with some of the constant turmoil within Haiti.
You not only have that, but you have to also look at it logically also. Today, the objective is to make sure that there is no qualifications on the ground in Haiti to be able to assess what we are talking about. Mm. To make sure that the day comes that they will say, okay, we make a deal. I take your resources, I will give you some peanuts because you have no one that can do it for you or help you out on it. And this is why the most educated resources, all the doors are open for them in every country. Haitians are the best at what they do everywhere in the world. If you have Haitians qualified as doctors in the United States, the majority will be between top-ranked doctors because they have that intelligence to take it a step further. If they are engineers, it's the same. You will find top-notch engineers. At one point, it's better for them to make sure that let's get most people out. Let's have a population that is less and less educated. Because today, this is the result. You have more and more people being less and less educated. The quality of the school, the quality of the teacher, everything is going down. Because you don't have universities. Today, you have 70,000 students coming out of high school. You only have 7 spots. of university seats in Haiti. The majority of the population doesn't have the money to go anywhere else in the world to learn or to understand. You don't even have any partnership of whatsoever with all those countries that we're talking about that are friends of Haiti. How come none of the universities have really major partnerships to continue training teachers, to exchange students program? Basically, we don't need to look far. We are still paying January 1st, 1804.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a very short station break, and when we return, we're going to continue our discussion with Mr. Joel Forbe. But I know him all the time as Pasha, as the most of the nation. So stay with us. We'll be right back. And this is Margaret Prescott on the ground in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and I'm doing a special report both for the Sojourner Truth Show in the United States as well as for the Real News Network. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, and our handle on Twitter and Instagram at So True Radio. And we're also on SoundCloud. You can look for us on SoundCloud. And in the tradition of Sojourner Truth, we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the great state of Florida. Indeed, but in particular in the area known as Little Haiti in Florida. And internationally, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the Caribbean island, my home nation of Barbados. And we are now going to continue our discussion with Pasha, as he is popularly known on the ground in Haiti. And he, a very important man in Haiti, he is a member of the executive committee of Famille Lavalas. And of course, that is the party headed by Jean-Bertrand Aristide and brought President Aristide into power. He is also part of the administrative council of the University of the Aristide Foundation. And we're going to be talking a bit more in our transition, Pasha, because there's so much to cover. We talked a little bit about the early years and President Aristide, of course, being forced into exile for like 7 years, it seems. Yes, it was 7 years. And part of that time, most of that time, in South Africa after the U.S.-backed coup, he was spirited away to Central Africa. Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who was on the ground recently here, went to South Africa. Mr. Danny Glover, after the movement on the ground in Haiti, who never gave up of wanting their president back, kept up that movement. And indeed, President Aristide, I think, was the powers that be felt that they really had to return him to Haiti. Now, I was there at the moment, actually, when the president returned. And Pasha, that was really when I understood flash flood in Lavalas, because I was on the grounds of the residence of the Aristides. We were invited with some of my colleagues from the Global Women's Strike in the UK to welcome him. And we were maybe a crowd of about 30 or so, including some doctors who, when the U.S. took over the medical school at UNIFA and closed it down, they went to Cuba and continued their studies, and they were there to welcome the president back. And we were standing there, and I can't tell you, Pasha, it seemed as though within 3 minutes, less than 3 minutes, I'll say 2 minutes, there were 30 of us. And I looked up, and we were surrounded by thousands of people. I mean thousands, in trees, and I mean these are like dark, black, barefoot Haitians there to welcome their country back. And I understood flash flood, because it felt like that. And one of our delegation members from Haiti Action in the Bay Area, Robert Roth, he looked at me and he said, Margaret, That's why they hate him. And I knew what he meant by they. So that was really quite a big moment. But when the president returned, he said his focus would be on education. And a lot of people didn't quite understand that. They said, well, he's going to come back, he'll be, you know, agitating, and, you know, he will want to become president again. So what is this thing about focusing on education? And turns out it was very, very profound vision, not only that he stated, but then he, along with Mildred Adestine, who we do have to credit, did the work then of rebuilding UNIFA. Tell us why that vision was so forward-looking and absolutely brilliant in so many ways.
I have to give you a little bit of the story also, because since you shared it with everybody, that same day, nobody believed that he was coming. Everybody thought it was a joke. It's not true. It's not. He's not going to come back. And this is why. This is what Lavala says. You know, when it starts raining and you think it's a small rain, there's a major rain and you see water coming from everywhere.
Yeah.
It's when they saw his face on television going down the plane and people started running like crazy.
Oh.
Not believing. And I was at the residence also that day. And what surprised me is when you saw all those people climbing the trees inside the residence just to see him.
Just to see him.
Just to see him. He took at least maybe 15 to 20 minutes to be able to get out of the car.
Yes.
When he got there. So it was a beautiful.
There was singing and there were weeping. And it was incredible.
Yeah, it was a beautiful moment. And believe it or not, that day, when he saw me, he said, we need to talk. A couple of days after, he said, university, we need to start this year.
And he had just gotten back?
Just gotten back. President, you think it's feasible? You think we can?
This was 2011.
2011. Mm-hmm. And believe it, in October 2011, we started with the first medical faculty at UNIFA.
How many months was that when he returned?
Not even 5 months. Not even 5 months. Time to recuperate, clean out everything, what they did, because the university was a mess. And we had this challenge. And seeing school starting in 2011, for real, I said, you know what, he has a real vision and he means business. And having a chance again to talk to him, I was thinking, what about the future? What about politics? He said, don't worry, this is the future of Haiti. That's the university, because we need to have trained people. We need doctors, we need lawyers, we need engineers, we need agronomists, we need every type of person. And to build a university and build all those faculty, we need human resources, which was very little. And which everybody was also afraid to say, wow, if I go there, you don't think that probably they were going to block me everywhere else. So everybody had that fear of, if they participated in building up this university, what will they be able to find a job? And years gone by, every year when we sit down to talk about the university, we put a project on the table, he puts a project, and we have no choice but to make it happen. And now that, since last year, we started having the first doctors graduated at the campus, he said, we need a hospital on campus so those students can not only practice, but the community of Tabor needs a hospital. We have practically over 4 million people in Haiti and Port-au-Prince, and very little hospital quality hospital care for them. The majority of doctors are working in clinic nowadays because there is not that vision of university hospital where it's a 24/7 emergency response team, maternity issues that we are having. Not only that, you saw probably the quantity of motorcycle nowadays, because people nowadays, if they have a motorcycle, they feel as though they have upgraded from what they make them believe they are. Like they don't believe they are equal as us as human beings. So for them it's important to have a motorcycle, but the motorcycle comes with accident. And there is no orthopedist to be able to address these issues daily. The daily issues that we are having in Haiti, the solutions are a great majority at the university.
Yeah.
If we want to build houses for them and different places, we need engineers. We need humanization programs for them to be able to say, okay, this is Port-au-Prince now, this is the solution for the Port-au-Prince, this is the steps to take for the next 20 years. So everything that we need is about research. The research starts at university. United States, Barbados, France, Canada, all the universities have research programs over everything. What we are going to do, we talk about soil resources, but we have no geological program in Haiti. So we don't even have one. If we have one, we don't have two.
And that continues to make you dependent then,
of course,
on foreign experts and NGOs who then come in.
Of course. Instead of, like I told you, those partners to say, you know what, each year, these are the specialty needs in Haiti. We need geologists. We're going to train 5 per year. We're going to train 2 per year. And every time the training is done, we're going to guide them through the map of Haiti so they can understand how to create. Instead, no, they are selling the country to Qatar, to other countries. Today, look at it. You hear that the population is claiming we want a process for Petro-Caribe. And today, the government of Haiti turning its back to Venezuela just like that, just to please the United States, while you spent $4 billion of their money that they put available for the Haitian people
through the Petro-Caribe,
program, and you pocketed it instead of building for this country.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how sad that reality is, where the international community, pretending to be our friend, but I think they are making us pay once again for that independence.
And Pasha, you have laid out so very clearly the importance of the vision and the importance of the work that the University of the Anesthesia Foundation is doing. And I've had the honor and pleasure of attending 2 of the graduations now of UNIFI. I was there for the one this year. 253 Haitian doctors, right, ready to be serving the Haitian people and not only the 1%. And also the dental school. I was very interested in the dental school because President Aristide was saying there's about one dentist for every, 3,000 people or something like that, or even more than that. And of course, there is a dental program now happening in Haiti. I'm looking at the watch, and time always goes so quickly. I have to be mindful of that, Pasha. So, a vision that everyone, it seems to me, are taking notice right now. And on this trip, when I walked into the auditorium of UNIFA and saw over 2,000 young black people, young Haitians, cheering their heads off because they were welcoming Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Danny Glover, of course, in particular, but also Walter Riley, who's an attorney and will be doing an online course with UNIFA. And looking at their faces, Congresswoman Waters, when she spoke, she said, "If I don't cry now, I'm going to cry before I go to bed." I mean, she was just so moved. And the face of Danny Glover, I mean, they just could not believe, because they were looking at the hope of Haiti. They were looking at the future leaders. They were looking at the people, Pasha, that you just so beautifully described. So there's that on the one hand. And also, on the other hand, during our visit, we also heard from victims and survivors of the massacres happening in La Saline, happening in Tokyo. I understand another one happened just yesterday. And it is being reported in the international press as though this is just gang warfare, just these criminals fighting each other for territory. But the report that I did in La Saline several weeks ago, when I went to the graduation, I went to La Saline and I took testimony from people, and they told me that they are being politically targeted because La Saline in particular has a very particular history, which perhaps you could tell us a little bit about. It is known to be a stronghold of the Lavalas, and many of the protests, which have been huge, some of which have shut down Haiti for a few weeks, of people demanding that President, I call him the selected president, the selected president of Haiti, Jovenel Moïse, step down, and for accountability for the theft of the Petro-Caribe money. A lot of those protests begin in La Saline. So they also said, we have seen and we know that there are people connected with this administration who are part of the attacks against us, including some perhaps corrupt police members of a force called Boyd. Everybody seemed very upset and concerned about Boyd. So that is the other thing that's happening. There's the hope of the work happening at UNIFA, and then there are the attacks on these communities. I wondered what you would want to share about these massacres. They're horrific. I went into the home. It's difficult to really talk about it. Where the smell of death was still in the home, and there was the skeleton of a woman who was pregnant and was burned alive in her home. I spoke to children who came up to me and said, they killed my father, and my mother has nothing, and now we're destitute. But nevertheless, the way they described what happened, the sorrow was there, but there were so clearly protagonists. And they said, we want the world to know that we are being purposefully targeted. Asha.
You know, Haiti is a very small country and very hard to keep secret. And also, it's a situation where, depending on the group, they like to brag about what they did, what they just did, or what they are doing. They like to show it and say it also. So it's no secret that today that so-called gang-related is not true. And today what is very hard to accept is that the international community is becoming accomplice of those massacres, because it is a massacre. Yesterday, Congresswoman Maxine Waters and you had the chance to hear some of those people, and they voiced out clearly saying, this is the guy killing us. They sent that guy to kill us. And Haiti today, even the fierce opponents of Lavalas, they step up to say, this is not acceptable. And everybody knows that it's coming from the head of the government. Orders are coming from the head of the government. The people of Asalin gave you the real story about how it happened. Since what day they started being punished because they said they were Lavalas and they loved President Aristide. And President Aristide was the only one thanking for them because he proved it himself. He transited from words to action. He said he would focus on education for the majority. Today, UNIFA is the cheapest university, not only in the island, but since it's not free, I would not say all over the world, because probably some places in the world you have governments that pay for their students, but really
Barbados.
It's not even $600 per year, completely, to give you an example of what the cost is at UNIFA. And this, what is frustrating for me today is the fact that I'm sitting down in a chair, in a wheelchair, and I cannot help those people.
That you are passionate.
No. Today it has reached a point where they need protection. They don't need words. They don't need a hand to put on their shoulders. They need to be protected. They are vulnerable. You saw them. Some of them are telling you that the dress that I'm wearing, I clean it at night to put it back again in the morning. It's because of my feet that I was saved. They gave you also a profound testimony telling you, we went to a police station. We thought we could stay there and be secure. At 3:30 in the afternoon, they kicked us out, saying that we were not able to stay there. So these are all the messages. As of today, you haven't heard a word from nobody from the government to say this is going to stop, we are going to address it. Instead, it went out to another populated area where last night they just opened up fire. People sleeping in their bed got shot dead. And again, knowing who did it, knowing who's on top of those guys, knowing who's giving them orders, who's sharing with them orders, let's be honest. Today in the world, they said there was a fight against ISIS. They put everything, human resources, material resources, technological resources, to say we're going to fight ISIS. You're telling me here, Haiti, you said you're fighting against drug trafficking in Haiti, and you cannot control arms coming from all over different places? Haiti doesn't produce arms.
You know where the arms are. You know where the arms are coming from. And
you have a police, a national police, that has been requesting for armaments or even bullets. And the government saying that they have no money to buy it, but they want them to go fight those people. So it's all about politics today. They are killing our brothers and sisters. They are repressing them so they can stay in power and hold power, because the money that they stole from Petrocaribe, if that process takes place, they are all going to jail. They don't want to go to jail. And today this is where the international community is being accomplished, because they know that a lot of those people stole the money, and the money that was designated to help the Haitian people. But you know why they don't care? Because this money came from Venezuela, and they are actually having problems with the government of Venezuela.
Yeah.
So this money can be lost, it doesn't matter. If you are, consider yourself as a Haitian, you have to give back to your country. What makes your country is the people of your country that makes your country.
But there's so many, and let's say people in the 1% in Haiti, who don't give back and indeed take so much from Haiti.
And that's the reason the situation is what it is today. And until we reach the point where we all understand that we need to look forward and start thinking for the majority of the people, because the world has been developed and we don't need to invent anything. We just need to be in good faith and accept to follow the rules that helps a country step up from its knees to be able to walk by itself and be independent. Haiti is the first black republic independent of the world. Haiti gave independence to black people all over the world. But do us Haitian understand what it means? Do us Haitian understand how beautiful it is that we have been the first black republic independent of the world? No. So until we do, and we care for each other, and we want what's best for each other, because if I want my sons to go to a certain school, I have to want the same thing for the majority of the people. So why can't we build schools that are in a system that is without exclusion? And we have to, unfortunately, repeat what President Aristide has been saying for years, and it's still valuable as of today. There's only one solution, is include everybody and start thinking for everybody and start wanting for everybody to be, because we would have been a much richer country, because you have visited many islands and you see that they have found their way to development, but everybody's living equally in those places. They have the same school, we share the same hospitals, and in the hospital bed, there's no exclusion. In the operating room, you cannot exclude someone. The doctor will give me the same treatment as he will give one of my brothers. Why is it that when we get out of that operating room, we cannot get along, or we cannot have feelings for each other? So for me, it's part of my education, and it's part of seeing also what's going on in other countries, saying that if I consider myself as a Haitian, I want the same for my country.
Okay.
So I will always be at the side of the majority until they get out of that misery, that poverty, which is increasing as the year passes by, instead of the other way around.
So at what point then in your education, in your life path, did you become involved with La Philosophie? For our people watching this show, or for our listeners who may not know what La Velas is, La Velas, the party headed by Jean-Paul Aristide, who was also the first democratically elected president of Haiti. And La Velas is also a movement. Someone told me that it means flash flood. Is that right? Did
yes.
I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and when I see supporters of La Velas on the street in the numbers that they are, you can understand the reason for that particular name. But at what point did you decide to not only become involved with La Velas, but you have great responsibility as a member of the executive committee? The executive committee of La Velas.
Yeah. It's like I told you, your roots are from your parents. Mm-hmm. And my roots, my parents, my father's uncle was exiled. His uncle was also executed, another one was executed by the Duvalier regime at the time. So they have always fought for this majority and always been in the camp of that majority that was suffering and that was poor. 1987, one of them participated in giving Haiti a new constitution. He passed away, unfortunately, now he's old. He died being old. And my father, my uncles, all of them, practically, they showed us the path to lead us. We used to play soccer. We used to have big fanatics with Violette and Racine, which are two soccer clubs in Haiti. So we used to be part of everything, every movement that was going on with the population, where the majority of the bourgeoisie, that we would call them, didn't go, unfortunately, at that time. So being raised like that in 1986, I was able to witness the departure of Duvalier and see the joy that happened in the streets, and see the hope also that the majority of the population had at that time.
Mm-hmm.
In 1990, it was the first time I was able to vote, so I was able to give my vote to President Aristide at the time and witness from there on everything that happened. I wasn't involved in Famille Valas at the time, but I was close enough to want to participate next to them at this time. We had the different coup d'etats that you know of, And then my uncle, Franz Gabriel, he was very close also to President Aristide. He was his pilot also, at one point, his helicopter pilot. And Franz is also my godfather. So we were very close, we are still very close. And at the time, I started getting involved a little bit more. In 2002, unfortunately, I got shot in the neck, and this is how I became quadriplegic. I came back in Haiti at the end of 2003, because I set the celebration, the 200 years, I wanted to be in Haiti, I had to be in Haiti.
We're out of time. I would like to thank our guest, Pasha Vorbe, and I would like to also thank Jackson Florent, our videographer on the ground, assisting me while I was on the ground in Haiti. I'd also like to thank our assistant producer, Sojourner Truth assistant producer, Romero Funes. I want to thank Jose Benavides also for his help with today's show, and of course to Mr. T. Teddy Robinson, our engineer, and to all who helped to make this show possible. If you'd like a copy of today's show...
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m. Stay tuned for One Land, Many Voices.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted.